kind of eating that sticks to your soul. You know who you are and where you're from.
This is Shelley Tomlinson, Belle of All Things Southern, and you're listening to the All Things Southern podcast, brought to you by Jim Taylor Chevrolet in Rayville, Louisiana.
Mama fills up our plates, Papa's saying grace, Louisiana living sweet as sugar on beignets.
Welcome back to All Things Southern. School bells are ringing around here. I imagine they are in your corner of the world, too. Which means, of course, that the lazy days of summer have come and gone. Not that there were that many of them, the lazy days. But it's all good. There's always something to celebrate. Like fall spice tea, for instance. I'm sipping on a cup now from this season's first batch. You can get that recipe in my storytelling cookbook, Hungry as a Mighty Fine Sauce, but you can also find it on my website if you want to follow me back home. That's allthingssouthern.com. Here in the Louisiana Delta, our farmers are knuckled down trying to get our crops out of the fields in and around these rain showers. And of course, we all have an eye on the hurricane season and what that can mean to our livelihood. Full disclosure, it can be an anxious time of year. If we let it, we choose not to, even if it means we need to roll our worries back on the good Lord's shoulders more than once. God is our provider, and fear is a liar. End of story. Speaking of saying no to fear, I'm looking forward to introducing you to my guest today. Author and entrepreneur Jessica Honegger will be joining me during the show to talk about her debut book, Imperfect Courage. She's a remarkable woman with a fascinating story. Don't miss it. Afterwards, I'll share my hearty cornbread and meat pie, and then I'll close with some devotional thoughts. But first, let's chat. Did you hear about fraternity leave? It's a new employee benefit created by a digital marketing agency. It's a few days off with pay for employees who have new pets. They say it gives them a chance to stay home and, say, help a new puppy adapt to its surroundings. I don't know. I'm treading lightly here because I know how special our pets are. But really? On one hand, our two labs, Bo and Hank, also known as the canine terrorists, needed plenty of adjusting when we brought them home last year as puppies. They chewed on everything in sight and harassed my guests by insisting on smelling areas they shouldn't smell, if you get my point. On the other hand, after their latest escapade, I was ready to take a leave from them, not with them. Did you miss that story? In short, those two tried to drown all three of us. Okay, that's not entirely true. They actually set out to join me, although uninvited, on a morning kayak adventure. The near drownings were strictly incidental. If you're curious, you can find the video where I told the story on my Facebook wall, and I'll drop some pics from that adventure here on the website. In other straight-running crazy news, did you see where Nabisco agreed to PETA's push to remove the circus bars on their animal cracker boxes? I can't make this up, folks. That's the world we live in. Someone has time to complain about the bars surrounding animals' pictures. They know we're talking about cookies, right? No word yet on whether they realize that little children will still be biting the heads off first. And because I heard about this, you should too. A 93-year-old woman in Augusta, Maine, is a huge fan of the TV show Cops. So much so that to grant one of her bucket list adventures, the woman's daughter talked local police into coming to her mama's house and arresting her. Yes, 93-year-old Miss Dumont was put into the back seat of the squad car and allowed to turn on the siren. She told the officer he made her life, to which he replied, "My privilege," and tased her. Joking on the tasing part. That was fake news. Oh, Welcome back to All Things Southern. I am delighted to introduce you to my next guest. Jessica Honegger is the founder of Noonday Collection, the world's most successful fair trade fashion brand. Jessica's passion for catalyzing courage in others has inspired women across the country to launch their own businesses as Noonday ambassadors. When Jessica isn't traveling the globe, you'll find her playing with her kids and chatting with her husband. But today you'll find her chatting on All Things Southern about her new book, Imperfect Courage, Living a Life of Purpose by Leaving Comfort and Going Scared. And I am delighted to have you. Hello, Jessica.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
You are mighty welcome. I am super excited about this interview. I have tons of questions for you. I kind of want to interview Jessica, the mom, and then I want to interview Jessica, the author, and then I want to interview Jessica, the entrepreneur. There are so many components to what all you are doing that are intriguing to me. But we're going to start with this fantastic book that you have released called Imperfect Courage. I need you to know that I have publicists dropping books in my lap from all kind of directions after more than a decade on air. And when I find one that is as intriguing as yours, I have to stop in my tracks and schedule the interview. So I'm excited to talk to you about this book. It is both memoir and call to action. There's no sitting by silently and watching you, Jessica. I mean,
that's true.
You are like, get in it with me, get in, get out. I mean, I love that. So let's start this direction. What is Noonday Collection, or who is Noonday Collection?
Yeah. Well, I'm super excited to have this conversation. So I'm glad that my book grabbed your attention, and I'm hoping it grabs all of our listeners' attention today. Noonday Collection is a socially conscious fashion brand, and we are creating opportunities for people around the world. We create opportunities for artisans that live in resource-poor countries, in about 13 different countries. And we create opportunities for them through a group of women here in America that we call ambassadors. Our ambassadors are our social entrepreneurs, and these are women. A lot of them stay-at-home moms or really wanting to make an impact or needing to earn an income. And they are creating this marketplace for the artisans that we work with all over the world. And so together, we've linked arms and really have put into action that her success is my success. And we've been able to create jobs for 4,500 artisans that impacts 20,000 family members. And we have over 2,000 social entrepreneurs here in America that are creating that marketplace for these artisans.
Fantastic. You know, even as our guests are listening to you describe those numbers and begin to describe what it is that you're doing in these women's lives that are the ambassadors and how they're connected to the people they're actually helping, here is what I want to do. I want to challenge everyone to stay with this conversation and listen to this story as it unfolds. Because Jessica, you didn't have like a big, great plan of action to start Noonday. Am I correct?
You are absolutely correct. And I think that's one of the main reasons I wanted to write the book, because I think it's very easy to compare our beginnings to someone else's middle. And I'm definitely in a middle right now. I'm not at the beginning anymore of this business. But let me tell you, at my beginning, it started from humble, humble beginnings. I remember going to a pawn shop to pawn off the confirmation cross that I had received for my confirmation. And I pawned off various pieces of gold jewelry my grandma had gifted me in middle school. And it's because I was a woman on a mission with not a lot of background in business, zero background in business, no money to my name, but my husband and I had decided to adopt to bring our third child into our family. We had two biological kids, and for our third child, we just wanted to really pray and ask God, you know, maybe we don't need to do this the old-fashioned way. There's a lot of ways you can bring a child into your family. And as we began to pray and ask God, we were really led to international adoption. And even after more prayer, we felt like a little boy was waiting for us in Rwanda, which is in East Africa. And we knew that international adoption was expensive, but thankfully we had a little nest egg and we thought, well, great, you know, we will use that nest egg in order to pursue this adoption, this clear path that God had put us on. And unfortunately, within a few months, we started the adoption process, began filling out all the paperwork, doing our home study, all the things you have to do. And we had been working in real estate at the time, and the real estate market began to tumble. This is in the whole recession of 2008, 2009. And very quickly, my husband and I were now living off of this great little nest egg that we thought could go fund our adoption. And before you knew it, we were actually putting groceries on the credit card. And it was a really scary time for us where we didn't have a lot of prospects. We didn't have a lot in the pipeline. We literally, my husband would drive to the closing table and there the deals were just falling apart. And yet when we looked back and knew that we had prayed and that God had really led us to adoption, we knew that he hadn't changed his mind and we weren't going to let finances get in the way. And for that reason, I knew I needed to start something. I wasn't going to just stay still and not do what I felt like God had called us to do. And so what to do,
because this is where, when I was referring to like wanting everyone to stay in with us and just watch this, as I read in Perfect Courage, and I really want to salute everyone to go out there and get this book and get the whole story that we won't be able to address, of course, in one podcast. But Jessica, as I watched how God used that desire of yours to bring another child into the world and everything that has happened out of that desire to bring that child into your home and how it has impacted people all over the globe, it literally is the truth that God gives you the light and the steps for where you are, and then you move forward and then you get more light. You never get B, and C and 1, 2, 3. So take us now back to that point where, I mean, you don't see this beautiful world called Noonday in front of you, but you're just looking for a way to make money. And take us there and tell us how Noonday began.
So during the adoption research process at that very beginning, when we still had money in the bank account, my husband and I had flown over to East Africa to go and visit a couple orphanages and meet up with some friends. Some of my friends were living in Uganda at the time, and they were there specifically because they wanted to create entrepreneurial opportunities for Ugandans. So they'd help a guy started a little plumbing business, and then they helped bigger projects like hotels implement mosquito systems. And one of those small businesses that they had wanted to help get off the ground was an artisan business. And they had met a young couple named Jalia and Daniel, and they really told me, I remember just them saying, these could be the future leaders of Uganda. They are so talented. They are trustworthy. And they said, we got them to make all of these goods. They said they're extremely poor. They're extremely poor, but very talented. And they got them to make all of these goods, and the goods were just still sitting in America waiting to be sold. They had done one little pop-up shop at their church or something. But other than that, there were just crates of stuff sitting here in America. And this business hadn't gotten off the ground because it involved people in America creating that marketplace. And they asked me if I would be interested in selling those goods. And I completely laughed them off. I'm like, I've got a real estate business. I've got two kids under five. Now we're starting the real estate. You know, now we're starting the adoption process. Like, I kind of blew them off. I really did. Even though, of course, what they're telling me, I thought, gosh, that sounds like a great business idea. I didn't think it was for me. Well, fast forward a few months later, when we are now, you know, eating ramen noodles on the credit card, and I'm thinking, okay, I remembered that conversation. So I texted them back and said, hey, I'm actually interested in selling those goods now. We are pursuing this adoption and we don't have the money for it. And they immediately got back to me and they said, Jessica, you just take this crate of goods. Like, we've already paid Jolly and Daniel. You just take it, open your home, see what happens. So I opened up my home. I like merchandised it like it was an Anthropology store. I got out like my grandma's dishes were lining the fireplace, my clothes. I had like a back sale room where I put all my clothes in there. I was basically like, whatever, if you see something in my house, it is for you. Just give me the right price. And then obviously these African goods. And I was so afraid. I was afraid of a lot of things, but I was afraid no one would come. And then I was afraid if they did come that I would look so desperate. And then if I look desperate, then that doesn't look good for our real estate business. And there were a lot of fears that really almost made me cancel it. And I thought this was a dumb idea. Kind of how you feel when you're launching a book. Like, really? Do I really want everyone to read this now? And I felt those fears creeping up. And I almost canceled. And I'm so glad I didn't, because people came. Women came. And women were inspired. They wanted to rally around this adoption story. They really loved the products and they really loved gathering, physically gathering. And there was one necklace in particular that sold out and people wanted more. I mean, it was like, wait a minute, are you going to be able to get more of this? And the next day I counted through how much we'd sold. We'd done about $4,000 in sales. And wow. I thought, I could do this again. I mean, you know, what if I just kept asking other women to open up their homes? And so I texted my friends in Uganda and I said, hey, we sold through almost everything. And there was one necklace in particular that everyone really loved. And they said, listen, why don't we connect you directly to Jalia and Daniel to see if you can take some of this money and actually order product from them, like give it a go. So they connected me and my friends, Jolly and Daniel, they didn't have a computer. So they're going to like an internet cafe in order to connect with me. I started saying some of the things that I wanted from them, including some paper beads, which they had never made before, but they didn't tell me that. They just were like, this is an opportunity. We're going to hustle, figure it out. I went and set up a Western Union account. That's when I realized, okay, I'm going to go pawn gold jewelry in order to fund the website, in order to get the business up off the ground. And honestly, before I'd even received a shipment from them, I called women and I was like, can you open your home for me? Can you gather your friends? I'm going to come. I'm going to share this story. I'm going to style people and we're going to change the world together. And I'm just so, so humbled that women, without having a brand name, without having really anything, said, yes, yes, we'll do this. And I am just blown away continually to this day at what happens when women show up for one another. Truly, when we show up for our lives, you know, when we don't hide, like when I quit hiding this story of like, we're desperate, we're broke. Instead, I just put that out there.
Yeah.
And when we show up, we go up and we bring other women along with us. And I've just had other women bring me along to their stories. And so within a few months, we had raised enough money to put that aside for our adoption. And I started having other women reach out to me. And they said, Jessica, we're also trying to adopt. I need to raise money for my adoption. Would you be up for me starting a Noonday collection in my town? And could I be sort of an affiliate? And I had set up our website on that Pond Gold Jewelry website, had affiliate links. So I had the ability to bring other people on and they could have their own website and all the sales could go through them. And the first gal that reached out to me was from Seattle. And I literally said, well, write up a compensation plan. Like, what do you think you should earn? And like, let's give it a go. So she wrote up her own compensation plan. I sent her, you know, some samples of product and we gave it a go. And then within like a month, I had a few more women reach out and say, I want to start this too. And very quickly realized, okay, we are not in Kansas anymore. This is not a fundraiser. This is a business and I need help. We were about to go get Jack and I was drowning. So wow. I don't know where you want to go. There's a lot
Well, I have 1,000 questions. Let's pause right there and like jump to the end and then back to the middle because I'm weird. Okay. Weird. So let's tell them like right now, we're talking business awards, the model that you have created. Can you speak just a little bit to that? The size of the industry, the business awards that you have received. Speak a little bit about the total success of the business model itself.
Yes. Yeah, so in 2015, Inc. magazine named us the 45th fastest growing privately held company in the nation. Last year, about a year ago, my business partner and I won the Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year Award for Central Texas, which is a huge honor. Forbes magazine just wrote about us. I was just featured in Inc. magazine and how I built that. Yeah, it really has garnered a lot of business attention. And we have 50 employees now in our Austin office and impact, you know, over 20,000 artisans around the world. And it's definitely grown into a viable business and a profitable company that's changing the world, just like I wanted it to be.
That just moves me on so many levels. As a believer, it moves me. As an entrepreneur myself, it calls to me. I mean, your story, Jessica, I was listening to you tell it. And even though I've read the book and enjoyed it the first time, I was enjoying it all over again, listening to you kind of describe, you know, how it happened and some of those early steps. I find you absolutely charming, as you mentioned, you know, how we even go, now what am I doing? Now I'm writing a book. Now what? You know, why do I think I'm writing a book? And some of those self-doubts. I told an author friend the other day, I'm in the middle of writing, I think, book number 7. And yet I still stop and go, but maybe I should work at Home Depot instead. I mean, you know, you still, those self-doubts
just telling someone today, I was like, sometimes I think it would be great to be a barista.
Yeah. You know, you're in the middle of writing yet another book and then you're still second guessing that I can write a book, which sounds kind of stupid when you've got, you know, books out on the market, but that's what we are facing, which brings me to the themes of your book that you alluded to a few moments ago. But I want to go back now to the middle of the story and kind of hit those, because it's the heart of the book. And that is the fear and the courage that you talk about in Imperfect Courage. Speak a little bit about that. Take that in the direction that you want to, what you have learned about how fear holds us back.
Yeah. You know, for so long, I correlated the word courage with firefighters and Martin Luther King and Mother Teresa and people that were doing very, in my mind, courageous things. And I kind of discounted myself. Well, I'm not one of those. Those are the heroes. But as I began to kind of look back and think about my sweaty palms and my racing heart as I show up at a pawn shop, worried that I'm going to be taken advantage of and wondering if this is actually going to pay off, or when I invited women into my house and wasn't sure if anyone was going to come, but did it anyway. And when there was a moment a year in when I had a business partner, a friend say, hey, I want to go all in with you. Let's be 50-50 partners. And I'm ready to live off my savings account in order to take a bet on you.
That is
when I realized courage is just being afraid and just going anyway.
Right.
Look at people's stories and we can think, oh, they just have it all together, or they're just so confident. They're just that very unique breed of people, the one percenters that just like, they're just go-getters and they're not afraid. But I don't know if those people exist. I would like to say that the go-getters are the ones that are afraid and are just going anyway.
Absolutely. And that's what I want those who are listening to us to hear is I love someone that can speak with that type of transparency and openness to let you see the fear in the middle of the process, the fear at the first, the fear that, you know, you have to make the decision every day, Jessica, in what you're doing. Although you are wildly successful with this business model and as an entrepreneur, we still make that decision daily to say no to fear and to go forward in what God has called us to do. This is going to sound like I'm stripping gears a little bit, but I just thought of a story that I had underlined in your book, and I thought I really want Jessica to speak to that when I have her on air. And it's that idea of measuring up and trying harder and running and running and running, as opposed to just living in this grip of grace and, you know, living out of the strength of Christ Jesus. So I'm going to tell you about the part that I enjoyed. I think I turned it down. Hold on 1 second. We're in PE. Okay. So I'm going to take you back there because I know how these books work. We've written them and then we don't, you know, we're not exactly on the
I can
page.
Go to PE class very quickly and easily. No problem.
Okay. Can you get there? Well, take me to PE. And when you realized later that that's what you've been doing for a long time, trying to go faster.
Yes. You know, I remember the presidential fitness test of the 1980s. And I remember my PE teacher wanted us all to score really well on the presidential fitness test. And part of the presidential fitness test was running the mile run. Now, if you were just to look at my body, you would know I am not a lean running machine. Okay. That's just not how God made me.
I love
it. I was one of the slowest runners in the entire grade. And
hey, can I interrupt you? Because I know my audience is as visual as I am. I want y'all to know that we're listening to a fit woman. She's just saying that she's not a lean runner. Okay.
I'm muscular. It's just, I'm not tall and lean. I'm definitely like more petite.
Yes.
So I would say that I was just definitely like athletically built. And this PE teacher really just wanted me to improve. Improve my time. And even though I was one of the slowest runners in the class, she wanted to improve my time. So to do that, she matched me up with the fastest runner in the whole grade. And she gave that runner one end of a jump rope and handed me the other end of the jump rope and said, "Beth, take off and run." And during that whole run, I just thought, I can't keep up. I'm not going to be able to keep up. And I can just remember my sweaty palms, even now, holding the end of that jump rope with this feeling, I'll never measure up. And I realized that I carried that feeling with me throughout my life, this feeling that I better run, I better keep up, I better try to be the fast runner, instead of just clipping the jump rope and running at my own pace and realizing I could be exactly who God created me to be. I didn't need to hustle. I didn't need to run someone else's race or win someone else's time. And I think it's really when I began to embrace my story and not try to be this unicorn version of myself. The unicorn version of myself is the one who homeschooled her kids and made organic meals every night and exercised 7 days a week.
Yeah, we all have that. Yeah, we all had that unicorn person.
We got her. And we got her in our heads. She's living in our head. And we think if we could just reach that, if we could just keep up with that person, then we could live a pain-free life. Then we would finally be accepted and we would belong and all of these problems we have would be solved.
And
instead of actually holding that up and realizing that's a lie, that's a sham, we chase after it. What we need to do is let go of the jump rope.
Amen. You know, I often tell audiences when I'm speaking that, you know, Jesus has reached that bar you're always striving for. He's reached it. And learning to embrace that and live in Him instead of scoring our performance is life itself. Amen?
Amen.
It is life. I'm going to read your own words back to you. At the end of that segment in Jessica's book, Imperfect Courage, she writes, "In my own life, I have struggled to slay the unicorn that says I will finally belong and finally be worthy of acceptance when I reach perfection. The version I tell myself that others want me to be. Only then will I be invited to pull up a permanent seat at the table." But my sister, I am thankful that you have learned so many of those lessons. And I'm thankful that you went scared into this book writing business and decided to put them down so that other people could gain from your experiences and be who it is that God has put us on this earth to be. So before I let you go today, do me one more favor and just tell me that one that goes and picks up this book on the shelf. What do you most want her to take from this book?
I want her to know that her life matters, that she matters. And I want her, wherever she feels stuck or where she's sitting on that couch perpetually watching Netflix or scrolling or just comparing herself, I want her to stand up and I want to take her by the hand and I want to walk her out that front door where she looks around and she sees that she's got a sisterhood who is missing out on her life, that she can bring to bear what she has to impact not only her neighborhood, but also to circle that around the entire world.
Very beautifully said, as is the book, Imperfect Courage, and every word that it's in it. I want to thank you so much, Jessica, for being by All Things Southern today. Know that you have an open door here for anything that you have going on that you need to tell us about.
That means so much. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, and God bless. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Shelley on All Things Southern.
Welcome back to the All Things Southern Kitchen. This is the type of cooking one uses to feed hungry farmers. You should have these ingredients in your pantry, refrigerator, or freezer, and you can lay down some hearty sustenance for your bunch. If you don't have the exact ingredients, you may have similar ones. Remember what I taught you about substitution. Learn that art and you're on top of the game. This is my hearty cornbread and meat pie. We'll begin by browning a pound of hamburger meat with a large chopped onion. We'll drain this and return it to the skillet. Then we'll add an 8-ounce can of tomato sauce, a can of whole kernel corn, a can of water, use the corn can, and a half a cup of chopped green pepper. We'll season this with a tablespoon of chili powder and salt and pepper it to our taste. Mix well and let it simmer 15 or 20 minutes. Now, I'm going to keep mine in my big old cast iron skillet, but you can turn this out into a 9x12 casserole dish if you don't have a big skillet. Stir up one box of Jiffy brand cornbread mix, or make your own cornbread, y'all. That's super easy, too. And I'll include those steps on the website if you want to go that route. We'll pour our cornbread mixture on top of our beef and let it bake in a 350-degree oven for about 20 minutes or until our cornbread is golden brown and just right. Enjoy my hearty cornbread meat pie. It's good eating. From the All Things Southern Kitchen to yours.
From allthingssouthern.com, here again your host, Shelley Tomlinson.
Let's close with some words, y'all. Philippians 4:5b through 7 reads, "The Lord is near. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all comprehension, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus." Is the following scenario familiar to you? You try not to fret about it, you know, that thing. You make your request and you find momentary release from your thinking, but it is tenuous, fleeting relief before the barrage of thoughts about that troublesome thing, person, or situation begins again. Yeah, I can describe it because I know it well. However, I have also learned, and the Spirit of God continues to teach me, how to break the chain and stop the circling train. The Lord is near. My hope for an escape from a troublesome, persistent train of thought is always found here, knowing and believing He is near. Emmanuel, dwelling with me to do what I can't. When I find myself caught in the vicious cycle, I now know to bow before Him and confess that once again I have been trying to pray it down and lay it down under the force of my own will. I surrender to the truth that on my own I can't stop thinking on the thought and analyzing it from every angle. I admit that I am needy and He holds my supply. And then I begin to celebrate that He is in me to do what I can't. This is when I experience the guarding. Not me trying, Emmanuel doing. Oh, the pressure-busting presence of God that guards a mind given over to Him. I would that I could pack this piece up and hand it to you, but I can't wrap the Almighty, and the peace I'm describing doesn't exist outside and apart from Him. Seek Him. Think about it, folks. That's it for this week. This is Shelley with Hugs for All.